So welcome to Paradigm Shifters. We have a wonderful paradigm shifter today, Mark Allen, who is a publisher of New World Library and creator of That Magical Place, and also a whole series of books. But Mark, welcome to the show, and let's talk about Tantra for the West.
Yes, thank you, Veronica. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and Tantra, let's talk about sex. Tantra is about sex, is it not?
Well, that's what everybody thinks in the West, and yes, it is, but it's also about so much more if you go back to the original meaning of Tantra. In my early 20s, I started studying first Zen Buddhism, doing a lot of meditation, and then I wandered into a Tibetan center that they called Tantric Buddhism. Tibetan Buddhism, they call Tantra Buddhism. And you start studying that and find out that they mean it much broader. By the path of Tantra, they really mean, what I finally realized after years of being there, is they mean the path of every moment of your life. Everything is your practice, every moment. So it includes sex, but it includes everything else too. So it's interesting that in the West, Tantra is just, it means sex. Just most people, if you say Tantra, they think, oh, sex with some kind of mystical element. And it is that, because what they're saying, if you study Tantra from its origination, everything, every moment, if you get into it deeply enough, leads to awakening, you could say, or enlightenment, if you want to use that word.
Well, you know, it's interesting. This is a very, very, let me see, this book has got aspects of our life. Each chapter brings up a whole aspect of our life. But when I was looking at lovemaking and sex, you know, just before we were talking here, I thought that it was wonderful the way you said, basically, you can make love with the universe. You're making love with and connecting with the universe, right? Isn't that kind of a nutshell of what it's all about?
True. And you don't even really need a partner.
And that's going to be a relief for a lot of people who are on that.
Yes, right. Yes. You don't need a lover to be in love, for sure. And sex is a wonderful meditation in itself, a very powerful meditation. Some woman even asked me after I talked recently, if sex is so powerful, you know, why aren't more people enlightened? Why is the world such a mess? And I said, well, it's very short-lived, unfortunately. You know, the sex in itself, it awakens our lower energy centers, our sexual centers, and then it takes it up our spine. It is a wonderful meditation. It opens our heart, and then it opens all our higher centers, and then we have a moment of real cosmic connection. I sometimes say, even atheists say, oh God, you know, at the moment of orgasm, and unfortunately, it's short-lived, and then we come back. And so part of our path becomes something Houston Smith really summed up well. He said, our opportunity as human beings is to take these moments of peak experience, these moments, and turn it into a lasting inner peace.
But actually, what happens to lasting inner peace and what happens to, for example, relationships or sexual relationships is often the clutter of emotions, right? The clutter of deep feelings. And you have a lot in this book about how to, well, I'll let you talk about it, but how to handle that, because we wouldn't all be enlightened if we, or maybe we would if we dealt with these deep and dissonant feelings on ourselves and other people, right?
I do. I think that's what it takes, is really dealing with those dissonant feelings. When I studied Buddhism in my 20s, it dawned on me it's not a religion by any sense that we understand religion. There's nothing to come to believe. There's no leap of faith. It's all very scientific, and it's ultimately a form of therapy. It's a practical philosophy and therapy that you can apply to your life. And that's what I was missing through my Western education. I took some philosophy classes at the university when I went, and I took some psychology classes, but they were all on this theoretical level that didn't use myself as a subject. I didn't apply to my life. But you go study Buddhism, any kind of Buddhism, and you're immediately confronted with every moment of your life, and that's your therapy.
When you say confronted, it's like, give us an example.
Whatever is arising for you is your practice at that moment. So whatever it is, if you have problems with anger, with fear, with jealousy, the best thing you can do is really get into those feelings, rejecting nothing. The path of Tantra, as I understand it, if you study the Eastern teachings, it's the path of every moment rejecting nothing. A Tibetan Lama I studied with once said, there's three types of people on the path up the mountain. And we're all on a path. We're all on our own path. And across the path of everyone, there grows patches of poison, he said. Now, in Tibetan, poison, the word for poison, like poison ivy, poison oak, is the same as so-called negative emotions, fear, anger, envy, jealousy, greed. They're called poisons. So a path of poisons are growing across a patch of poison is going across your path. So they understand, that also means negative emotion. And the Lama said, the first person coming up the path is on the path of the monk or the nun, and they come up the path, they see that poison, and they immediately go another way. And that's a perfectly good path for some people. You can just immediately go the other way. Just avoid it. Don't go there. That's one way to deal with it. Then up the path comes the Bodhisattva, the awakening being who pledges to awaken all humanity. And in fact, every being on earth is their goal to awaken. They come up the path and see the poison, and they plow through the poison and go on up the path to awakening. And that's a wonderful path too. Then the tantric yogi comes up the path, the person on the path of Tantra. And in this little story, I finally figured out what he meant by Tantra. He said, the tantric yogi comes up the path, comes up to the poison, and immediately goes right into the center of the poison, even though it takes him or her off their path. They go into the center of it. That becomes your path.
If so you have an stay anger, there, you mean?
You get into it so deeply that you finally transform it. Anything, any activity, any feeling, any thought, when we go into it deep enough, it transforms.
Even if it's something as ugly as jealousy, because a lot of times people reject the idea of admitting jealousy, right?
Right. So the best thing to do, if you're on the path, if you are courageous enough for the path, and that's why it is a direct path, because it confronts whatever's happening. So if there's jealousy there, really get into that jealousy. Really say, what am I telling myself? How does this feel in my body? Well, how is this affecting me? And really get into the center. Really do an analysis of it. It's basically self-analysis. Mm-hmm. Or for a lot of people, if it's really intense, you may need another person to help guide you into the therapy of it. But
you're saying if you're jealous in a relationship, you can't really aim that at the other person's behavior. Is that what you're saying as well?
Right. You turn it all within you. It's your jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on inside you? He was always pointing, my Tibetan teacher, inside us. And another great teaching he gave me that I grappled with for years, I reflected on a lot. He said, everything, every object, every feeling, everything in the universe has its outer, inner, and secret levels. And that's what he had us reflect on. We first look at the outer form, say jealousy. What's the outer form of jealousy? Well, it makes me upset. It makes all these thoughts go through my mind. Okay, then you get into the inner. What's going on in an inner plane in your body? Well, there's all these feelings that kind of in my stomach, they're not pleasant. If you keep going into the inner feeling deeply enough, you'll break through into the secret. And the secret is secret, only not because anyone's trying to keep anything secret, but because it has to be revealed to us. If we go into the inner side of anything deeply enough, we break through into the great secret of our existence.
Is the secret great, like what's true for you that you might not know? Is the secret just the universal existence?
It can be anything, and it can be said in many different ways. It can be many different things for many people. We all are totally unique. But say as we get into our jealousy, as you really look at that jealousy and you really get into the internal feeling, this whole practice encourages us to just throw open the doors of any feelings that we don't want to feel and examine them, shine the light of our awareness on them. And when we do that, those feelings start to change. When we really embrace and accept our feelings and start looking at them as what they are, they shift.
Mm-hmm.
I had a great, like, dramatic example of this in the dentist. In my early years, I had a lot of dental work, and it was very painful.
Mm-hmm.
And so for many years, I hated going to the dentist. It was painful. Then after I'd had some of these Tibetan teachings, I was in the dentist, and he was drilling, and it was hurting. And I realized I was going, oh, I can't stand this. Oh, this hurts. And I realized I'm rejecting this pain. I don't want to feel this pain. I'm making it all that much worse by rejecting it. What if I just relax and accept what is, totally accept this is where I am right now. I'm in the dentist chair. My path, my spiritual practice right this moment is dealing with this pain. Okay, just relax. And the pain just shifted. It totally changed. I no longer even felt it as pain. I realized it was like this amazing, almost electric energy surging through my body.
Wow.
As he was drilling. It was energy. It's all energy. You go into any feeling, jealousy, anger, fear, it's all energy in our bodies. Oh, we are these beings just filled with all this energy.
That sounds like ecstatic dentistry.
Yeah, right. Right.
A good bumper sticker. But that's right. It's all energy. So carry on with that, because when we talked about sex and kundalini and all that, that is just energy too. So it's kind of linking with your energy body, is it?
Yes. We have this amazing life energy when we get in, say, look at our just body in general as an outer-inner secret. Outer, well, we see the outer. Everybody sees the outer. We're a certain height, certain weight, certain hair color, certain body type, all this. That's our outer body, yeah. And it's quite an amazing thing when we think about it. We go within. Wow, it's this amazing collection of organs all working together doing these amazing things. You go in deeper. Well, those organs are composed of all these cells. Oh, each of those cells is filled with energy. Each of these cells is vitally alive. We have billions of them all working in this amazing partnership together. You go deeper, you get in like the molecular level, the atomic level. Now scientists in the 20th century became very metaphysical because they started saying the same things that the people into mysticism, so-called, have been into for thousands of years, saying it all gets down to mostly empty space. When you go within subatomic particles, what's going on? It's mostly empty space. The Buddhists have been chanting for 2,500 years, form is emptiness, emptiness is form. So, it's empty, and it's filled with this energy, incredible energy. And all of these atoms, all of these molecules are working together in this phenomenal system that is alive, and it's life. And you break through into anything, you get down to that level, you get to the fact that we're all part of one quantum field. As some microbiologist said, you can't tell where the tip of our finger ends and the so-called outside world begins, because it's all one fluid field. We really are all one, science has proved that now over the last century, what the mystics have been saying forever. I can see a couple hundred years ago where most people thought the mystics were completely crazy, saying all is one. And you look, you say, well, obviously that's not true. I'm not the same as you. When I cut myself, you don't bleed. I'm obviously very separate from you. And that's completely true on one level. But you go more deeply into it. You get into the inner levels of our bodies and the inner level of anything. It leads you to these great secrets that we really are all one in one vast quantum field. That's reality. And when we realize what is, we're enlightened. All our problems dissolve.
So there's a lot of healing that goes on when you're in, I love what you're saying. I'm changing it a little bit because I want to say there's a lot of healing involved with dropping inside and being with a negative feeling until you get to the secret. There's a lot of actual physical healing in that, isn't there? Would you like
there
to
is.
Say anything about that?
Yes, there is a lot of physical healing that happens with these practices. Just meditation itself really helps to heal your body. My Zen teacher was saying that. And just getting into everything, rejecting nothing, really helps to heal your body.
So if we go back into we're all one, and I go into or you go into a situation where you're healing your body by healing the negative feelings, right?
Mm-hmm.
What impact, I guess I'll jump to toward the end of the book where you're talking about politics. What impact does it have when I'm working on that sort of thing on the collective, the oneness of it all? It kind of gets mythical for me, or a little out there. Mystical, I guess, is a better word, right?
It does have a huge impact. We have a huge, our level of awareness has a huge impact in the world. It just, it's way beyond us, and you know, it is each of us. It is like dropping a little pebble in a very still lake, and these ripples go out. That go through the entire world. So the consciousness of one can and does affect many, 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 many. And I,
do you have any stories of yourself coming to awarenesses that we could all enjoy? Because I know you've been through a lot yourself.
I definitely have some stories, like something in meditation. I did notice my teachers never talked about their meditation stories. They just kept saying, do it. Go through these exercises. Do it and find out what happens for yourself, because it can lead to preconceived notions of what is supposed to happen, and that can become part of the problem. But I can give you a really good example of something in the book. After I introduce Tantra, I get into what the single most effective practice has been for me, which is simply affirmations. And at the Tibetan Center, we did these various mantras chanting, like Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum.
They what exactly does that mean again?
It means, finally, I used to chant it. I remember walking through the streets of Berkeley trying to calm myself and center myself. It means Om is the cosmic symbol. Mani is the jewel of bliss, really, a jewel of bliss. Padme, in the lotus of consciousness. Padma means lotus.
Right.
So it's basically saying, we have a lotus, we have a jewel of bliss deep in the lotus of our consciousness, is what it's saying. Well, I had trouble translating it or really getting it or really seeing it have an effect on my life. So I did wander around a lot in my mid and later 20s, and I discovered affirmations in the English language, and they have a powerful effect, powerful. And one concrete example of affirmations, for example, the day I turned 30, I decided to start a publishing company. I had no knowledge of business, nothing. I'd been a spiritual seeker. I'd spent 4 or 5 years at various centers and then I played music and done other things in my 20s, but nothing had anything to do with business or making money or anything. And the day I turned 30, I remembered a little exercise I'd done years before when I was about 22. I tried a back to the land experiment that was a disaster. But we were sitting around the fire one night, and this couple said, "Let's play a game we play at church camp. Let's imagine 5 years had passed and everything has gone as well as you could imagine. What would your life look like?" And we all went around the fire and said what we said. I don't remember a word of what I said, so it had no impact on my life. But the day I turned 30, I remembered that. Oh, this mm-hmm. little rabbit just came up, this beautiful little rabbit. I'm in my backyard. He just came right up to me almost.
Oh, he must be knowing that he's, well, magic. Is he
he's listening. He's listening to what I say. Maybe he understands. Hey, rabbit. Anyway, the day I turned 30, I remembered playing this game, but this time I took a sheet of paper and wrote it down. I wrote ideal scene at the top, and much to my amazement, what spilled out was, I have a publishing company that publishes my books. I'd never written a book. And my music, I'd never recorded my music, and is very successful, and I created in an easy and relaxed manner, a healthy and positive way, a great affirmation I'd heard. And that became my goal, and that changed my life. I started a company, and because I didn't know what I was doing, the first 3-4 years were a mess. I had no awareness of, I had no marketing or anything. I got some good books out, including Creative Visualization by Shakti Gawain.
Yeah, I was just going to mention book. That. That was a real groundbreaker book, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, and it was a real early book, and it started to do really well. And then I wrote the first version of Tantra for the West in about...
Oh, wow, that long ago.
Way back then, long ago, yeah, the first version. I've now just totally updated it and made it sharper and more focused, I think. But
more appropriate for people right now, too, I think, eh?
Yes, I think so, yes. Mm-hmm. We had great product, but we had real lame marketing, because I have no interest in marketing or sales. And we had no financial controls, because I'd never even heard that phrase. And I had no financial guidance or anything. And so it was a mess financially. We were deep, deep in debt. I'd finance a lot from my credit cards. I was $65,000 in credit card debt.
Wow,
and
that's a lot.
The early 80s, too, so that was a lot. And the whole company didn't get paid for 6 months of sales because its distributor collapsed, our distributor. And so we were on the verge of bankruptcy. And I was personally, and the whole company was, and it was just this financial mess with tons of anxiety, and I kept feeling all this anxiety in my stomach whenever...
And did you have employees?
Yeah, I had, by that time, probably 6 or 7 employees or something.
Oh, my, okay.
One guy quit because he said, I can't take the stress, and the fact that he'd get a paycheck, but we'd say, don't deposit it yet because it'll bounce. Wait until we tell you. And he finally, he just said, I can't take this amount of stress, you know, and he left, and it was really stressful. And I remember one time I was driving down the freeway. I was on the way to the bank because I'd gotten a new credit card, and I was going to get another cash advance and pay down my minimums. And I wasn't making enough to even pay my minimum, so I was heading for bankruptcy. And I realized I was really agitated. And I thought, okay, that's the time to get into the agitation. That's the practice of Tantra. Whatever is arising is your path that moment. So I really got into that agitation. I said, what's going on? Well, my stomach is just churning. I think I was heading for an ulcer if I wouldn't have resolved it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what am I telling myself? And I said, well, it's going through my mind. I'm just berating myself. I'm saying I'm a fool with money. I'm out of control. I don't understand money. I'm just an idiot. I can't do anything right. My inner critic is just having a field day, blaming me for being stupid and incapable and what a mess I've gotten myself into. And I got into that and I said, okay, what deep underlying beliefs are there? Those thoughts, what beliefs? If you can get down to these deep beliefs, you can really make changes in your life, because our beliefs are not true in themselves. They're things we've just accepted as true. But there are all kinds of people that have very different beliefs, very different. Around, we're looking at money right here. Okay, money. A lot of people believe it's easy to make money and make money easily and effortlessly.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just struggling. So I realized my belief was I was a fool with money. I was out of control. I nailed that belief as simply as I could. If we can nail these beliefs in words that even our inner child understands.
Yeah, a lot of people think money is dirty too, don't they?
Yeah. I had part of that too. Oh, it's, you know, didn't Jesus say it's terrible for, you know, a rich man in the kingdom of heaven and mm-hmm. all this stuff. And yeah, money's not spiritual too. And yes, as an artist, oh, making money is a terrible thing.
Sort of beneath you.
Yeah. I definitely had all that stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And I realized my belief was I was a fool with money, I'm out of control. So I came up with the affirmation. When you realize you're telling yourself something really negative like that, something really limiting, like you're a fool, you're out of control, when that inner critic is berating you, find out what that inner critic is saying exactly and start affirming exactly the opposite. Come up with an affirmation, which is like an American mantra that completely counteracts it and contradicts it. So as I was driving down the highway, I literally came up with those words that, oh, I'm a fool, I'm out of control. And I said, okay, what directly counteracts that? And I said, okay, I am sensible and in control of my finances. I am creating total financial success in an easy and relaxed manner, a healthy and positive way. That was my affirmation. Those words felt so good. The right affirmation will feel good from head to toe. It'll really take on some of those deep, ingrained beliefs.
Did you write them down, Mark?
Yes, I pulled over immediately because I thought, this is good and I'll probably forget it. I pulled over to the shoulder of the freeway, immediately grabbed a little card and I wrote, I am sensible and in control of my finances. I am creating total financial success. I went into the office. I put it up in big letters right on my wall in front of my face at my desk. I put it up in my dresser at home. I put it on my bathroom mirror. I carried it around with me. To this day, I carry a list of goals and affirmations in my pocket. I started doing that the day I turned 30, and I've done it ever since. And
so you're still doing it. You're still creating them. Okay, good.
I'm still doing it, yeah, because it works. It's such an effective, powerful thing. I literally said that affirmation at least a couple hundred times, maybe even a few thousand times over the next year or so, and the company completely turned around.
Hmm.
I realized, oh, it's as those words, as my subconscious absorbed that affirmation, I am sensible and in control of my finances. I'm creating total financial success in an easy and relaxed manner in a healthy and positive way. I started to see, oh, it's really very easy. Understanding money is simple. It's very easy to be in control of your finances. I realized that, no higher math is required. You just need to make more money than you spend. this is not a difficult concept. Somehow I made it all this so difficult and complicated. No, it's very simple.
Hmm.
The older I get, the simpler I see everything. The truth can be expressed very simply, and when it is, it's powerful. So I started telling myself, rather than I'm a fool with money, I'm out of control, I started saying, oh, I'm sensible and in control of my finances. I'm creating total financial success.
And your subconscious just absorbs that and starts playing it out. Is that right?
Yep. And that became my reality. The right marketing person came along to help me out, the right financial person. And
well, how many books were you working with at that point? Were you kind of publishing a lot of books or three?
At first, we just did a couple a year, and then we did three, four, five, six a year or so. At the time, maybe we were doing that, something like that. And
So how did you develop the rest of your company, meaning how you developed a cooperative company, didn't you?
Right. It just grew. I when we were still losing money and struggling, and I remember I read this article in an Inflate magazine. I didn't read many business articles at the time, but I was sitting on a plane, and there was a magazine I flipped through, and I saw this article, and this article transformed my entire company because it was about a Swiss hotel that was losing all this money and was in really bad shape, and they hired this new manager, and he sat down with all the owners. There were like 15 or so owners around a big table, and he came, and he said, well, here's the deal. If you hire me, I'm going to turn this around and make a profit, but half of that profit is going to employees, and half will go to you as owners.
Wow.
And some owners objected. He said, look, you're not making any money anyway. You know, he said, just watch. You give half to employees, you make way more than twice the profits. And he said, in fact, the hotel's such a mess, this will be the formula, actually. I'll take a third of the profits at first and put them back into the hotel. And then employees get a third and owners get a third. And again, some of them objected. And he said, you're losing money. Give it a shot. And so he took over. And at the end of the first year, employees got a bonus check worth a couple weeks' salary.
Wow.
By the end of 7 years, when the article was written, employees got a bonus check worth 8 months of salary in one check out of profits.
And how does that work? Is the incentive, it creates incentive in the employees?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I wrote a whole book, Visionary Business, about this, and I do not understand why every company doesn't understand this. If you give half of your profits to your employees, you will more than double your profits. More than double. I went back to my employees. We had like six people. We were losing money. And I said, look, help me make a profit. And half the profits will be split among your employees. That's the way it works. Half the profits.
Did they respond well? Were they scared of the idea?
They responded amazingly.
Really?
And I even wrote, profit sharing with every employee makes a bad employee into a good one. And it makes a good employee into a brilliant one who can really creatively help expand that company's bottom line.
What's your business book called?
Visionary Business.
Visionary business. Also, how many of the people that you initially started with are still with you now, or is that way too far down the road?
Well, from the very beginning, no one is. But then when I started affirming I'm sensible and in control of my finances, that was almost 35 years ago now, 30-some years. And Victoria Clark, my CFO, came along. We hired her first as a bookkeeper, and then she immediately saw we needed guidance and financial controls, and she joined me, and she's been with me ever since. And then a few years later, our marketing director came along. He came out of a big publisher. He really knew the industry and knew how to promote books, and those two have been with me ever since.
Wow, that's very inspiring, because these days people are popping off businesses as fast as they can go, right?
Yeah, our average employee now has been with me over 15 years.
That's wonderful. And you have a rather broad range of books, don't you?
Pretty much so, yeah. We keep expanding out. We've done fiction. We've done all kinds of things. Our animal books are really a fast-growing category.
Really? Well, let's go back into Tantra for the West. I'm fascinated by this book and the whole process of bringing it together under sex, because you know sex sells, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Especially in this society.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Sex sells it. Right.
Go ahead. I was just going to ask you to talk about relationships, because, I asked you a bit about politics, and we can get farther into that, but the relationship problems are huge right now, because I always think that the society is growing and we're having to really examine the secret values or secret value distastes that we've had, and there's this kind of rising up and pushing apart. I don't know. I kind of think of it that way. But you've got some great tools for relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yes, things are always pushing apart, but they're also always coming together. And there definitely is a season for everything, and I love it. The simple ancient image of yin yang, of dark light, is deep and profound. There is a season for everything, and so I always encourage people in doing this kind of work to right from the, and this is right in the beginning of Tantra, start asking yourself questions and listening for answers and find your own guidance within. It's much better than anyone else's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And because there is a season for everything, there's a time to really hang in there in our relationship, and there's a time to walk away. And only you know in your inner being what that time is. There's a season for everything. But in relationships, in sex, in everything, there are great, profound, deep teachings. I mean, sex is a wonderful meditation on the forces of creation. You know, it literally can create life. It's an amazing meditation to reflect on that unites you with the cosmos. And it's one of our most wonderful, intense forms of meditation that we have. In long-term or any kind of relationship, that's another incredible meditation for us to look at. And we can see how every relationship mirrors us.
Mm-hmm.
We look at the person we're with, say, and whatever feelings arise at any point, they're really, it's what's going on within us that's really important. And again, affirmations for me have been one of the most powerful tools to transform relationships too. I carry my list of affirmations around with me. I often think the first and last are the most important. My first affirmation is, I am guided by spirit every moment. I just keep affirming that. I'm guided by spirit. So my inner guidance every moment is telling me what to do. That's a powerful thing, because that inner guidance then does keep arising and tell me exactly what to do. And then I have very specific affirmations about even my company and its sales and profitability and my books and music and stuff out there in the world. And then my last affirmation I end with is, my marriage and family life are filled with grace, ease, and lightness.
And is it
great
so?
Season. It is so. I keep affirming it, and it is so. Yes. My wife is Brazilian, too, and sometimes there will be Brazilian soap opera dramas, I call them, that go on. You know.
Flash
and yet, even within that, if I affirm, my marriage is filled with grace, ease, and lightness. Grace, ease, and lightness. Just repeating those words for me fills me with grace. And I've reflected on those words. That's a powerful affirmation. I am filled with grace, ease, and lightness.
Mm-hmm.
I even say, my wife chuckles at this, but I say, my marriage, my family life, and times alone are filled with grace, ease, and lightness. Because I have found I have as much time alone as I have with my wife during a typical week. And that's what I need to make our marriage really work. I need equal time alone. And I have time alone. She's good about that. And so I keep affirming, my marriage is filled with grace, ease, and lightness. And those words have gotten to be so deeply imbued in my whole subconscious. And I think about it. I think grace really does feel like it comes from elsewhere and descends on it, like a blessing, descends on us.
It's like a blessing, isn't it? Yes.
Like a blessing, yeah. Ease, we realize, oh, we create ease from within. Ease is up to us, and it's the opposite of stress. Our stress is self-induced.
Mm.
If we keep affirming that we're doing everything in an easy and relaxed manner, a healthy and positive way, in its own perfect time, for the highest good of all, that dissolves stress.
Mm-hmm.
Stress is self-induced. We accept it. Most people in our culture, I was driving in the other day, an ad on the radio said, in your stressful day, right here in the middle of you, and I turned the radio on, I said, I'm not having a stressful day. I'm affirming my day is easy, relaxed, healthy, positive.
Also, there's another thing about stress, Mark. I think if people in interpersonal relationships are defensive and frustrated with themselves, that stress is underlying in terms of, you know, disagreements and so on. You know, you say it's back to yourself, but sometimes we don't think of going, oh, I am out of comfort.
Yes.
And yeah.
Right. Yes, definitely. Relationships can be completely healed by just dealing with your inner work. As Eckhart Tolle said so succinctly in The Power of Now, get the inside right and the outside will fall into place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's absolutely true. It's true about anything we do out in the world. We get the inside right, the outside falls into place. I always have this feeling that in creating the success I have in the world, 99% of the important work was all internal.
In yourself.
Pardon?
In yourself, you're saying.
Yes, within. Mm-hmm. 99% is internal. And then the external work just became simple and obvious.
So if you're having a disagreement at work or somebody in that workplace, or even in your, you don't have to talk about your marriage here, but I'm just thinking for people, it's really helpful, isn't it, to think we stop. What is it we do? We stop?
Yes, we stop.
Mm-hmm.
And look at what's going on within us.
Within us.
And find whatever, this person is frustrating, this situation, and we deal with that within. We start affirming something like this relationship is filled with grace, ease, and light. This is even an amazing one to do,
mm-hmm.
or something. Now, given that, there's also things that if it's a difficult conflict at work, say, or in a marriage, whatever, also, there are some things we can do with that other person that really help. And the greatest thing in relationship is learning how to listen without interrupting and without denying, defending. I learned this argument settling technique somewhere in my 20s from some therapist, and that's, you could say that's pure tantra in a way. It's getting into the path of arguments. If you're arguing, that becomes your spiritual path. And there is a very, very simple way to resolve all arguments. And it's just, there's four simple steps you do. They're simple to say, they're challenging to do. Because
okay.
The first step, if you're in an argument or you have a conflict with someone at work, you talk to them. We've got to learn to talk to each other. We've got to learn.
Even
to
when
just,
we're uncomfortable, right?
Even when we're uncomfortable. That's the solution to the world's problems. We've got to learn to talk to everybody. Realize we're all here together. We're one big dysfunctional family. We need to sit down and talk and negotiate win-win solutions so that I can live my life without you wanting to change things, and you can live your life without me needing to change you to make it work for me. Whether it's personal relationship or global, it's the same thing. And there's this simple little technique that really empowers you. But it's tricky to do it first, because the first step, if you're in an argument, it works best when you're right in the middle of an argument. The step one is stop and say to the person, look, this argument is getting us nowhere, because arguments get us nowhere. What happens? We're frustrated. We're not listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
No one has ever in the history of humanity stopped in the middle of an argument and said, you know, you're right. I changed my mind. You're right. I agree with you. That doesn't happen in an argument.
Also, usually there's a clutch in the belly or the solar plexus or something, because you've got something going on you don't even know.
Right. There's all this stuff. There's this frustration going on, and you're interrupting because you feel you're not being heard. They're interrupting you. They're feeling they're not being heard. So the only positive solution, the only way to resolve it, is for one person to stop. You say to the other person, "Look, this is getting us nowhere. We're interrupting each other all the time. I'm going to just be quiet and listen to you, and I'm not going to interrupt you. Then I'm going to ask you to do the same thing to me. But for now, you say whatever you want to say. I'm going to just take it in." And that's the trickiest, most difficult thing, But when you learn how to do it, it's incredibly empowering to be able to hear criticism of you and your actions from somebody who's upset without denying it, defending it, putting yourself down, or putting that person down in any way. Just taking it in. You just take it in. Ah, the universe right now, my practice is this person is right in front of me, really upset with me, and saying these things. That's what's going on. You just accept that without resisting it. You learn to hear what other people have to say without denying and defending immediately, which is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
I've done this
because we can't handle it. If we're judging ourselves and we're defensive, we really are scared of those kinds of truths.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And if we get, you know, basically, I'm okay, you're okay. That was a great book title years ago.
It was.
We're okay. We're okay. Okay, so just listen to them. They're here for some reason in front of us, really upset with us. Now, maybe it's all their problem, but they need to find that. You can't point that out to them. Your problem is, your challenge is to just hear what they're saying, really listen to them. Oh, they're really upset with me because of that, that they felt that, you know, hurt them or whatever they're saying, whatever's going on. I've done this hundreds of times. When you do not interrupt with a person, they never go on longer than 2 or 3 minutes. Even in the most heated argument, I've even stopped. I've had friends in arguments. I've stopped. I've just stepped in. I've said, look, let's do this. And I've been the moderator. I said, okay, one of you just start speaking, but the other one do not interrupt. And I've done it hundreds of times over the years, and no one has ever gone on longer than 3 minutes. 2 or 3 minutes is
wow.
All it takes. And then the other person, then you say, okay, you've had your say, that other person listened. So now you listen, and don't deny it, not even with body language. Don't cross your arms and look irritated with what they're, you know. Nobody,
and
no,
don't
just
tap
learn,
your foot, right?
Right, don't tap your foot and you know, no, just learn to take it in. Oh, they're upset with me, and they're saying why, and you learn to take that in without denying, defending, putting them down, or putting you down. And it's amazing. It's transformative. So that's just step. So you go around and around, back and forth, without interrupting, as long as it takes, and then you can get to a point where you just say to the other person, okay, what do you want from me? Because underneath every argument, there's something someone wants that they feel they're not getting, and it's often very simple.
Mm.
And then you say what you want from them, and then you work it out. You negotiate, you come to some.
So what is
kind
it? Is it sort of like time, space, attention, hearing? What is it?
What we want from each other?
Yes.
Yes, yes. It's, you know, all of the above. Sometimes it's just, I want you to listen to me more. I want you to be around more. Or I need my space to myself. I want more time to myself. I need whatever it is.
And you know something, Mark? When I interviewed John Gray, you know, Men Are From Mars.
Yes.
Guy,
mm-hmm.
And he was talking about how that, it wasn't exactly the same exercise, but very similar. But he said that actually affects our hormonal balance. And I loved knowing that as well.
Oh, I'm sure it does. I'm sure it does. I have done this many times, and you can feel the anger and frustration just dissipate.
Just melt down.
It just melts down within. Usually, I mean, I've had like one mother and daughter was screaming at each other. I mean, they were really intensely upset. I stepped in and said, I'm going to, let me do this exercise with you guys. Let me do this. Okay, one of you start speaking and the other don't interrupt. And within 10 minutes, they were crying and hugging each other and saying how much they loved each other.
Aww. Well, I was going to ask you about parents. Well, mothers and teenage daughters are sometimes really tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Was that this mm-hmm. circumstance that you're talking about?
That was. It was. And that's why it's so good to just really give people, really learn to listen to people without interrupting.
Mm.
It's a powerful, powerful practice. It works in business. It works in personal relationships.
So did you establish that at your company? Did you establish this sort of way of handling disagreements?
Yeah. Not that I had to do it much in my company. When I think about it, I think in over 35 years, there are two situations where someone's even been just gotten angry and out of control. One was this strange author, and I heard him yelling at one of my associates, and I got up, I walked right up to him. He was this big, intimidating guy too, and I said, "What's the problem?" And he started saying, "Well, we had a deal here that blah 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 blah," and I just at the time, that's when books were still. They were on big sheets. This was a long time ago where we got from the printer actual negatives of the pages. And I had his whole book there all rolled up, and we were going to do a version of it. But he was all upset about something. And so I handed him his book and said, "Look, you're obviously not happy with this. Just here, take your book back." And it was, he'd done this hardcover book, and we got him a paperback deal with Bantam. It was a business book. Wow. And we said, "Look, we can get you this paperback deal, I bet, and so, you know, we'll be your agent. We'll get 15%, because I know people at Bantam," so I made some calls. And sure enough, they picked up his book, and we got him an advance, and it happened that, and he said, "Okay, if you do it by the end of the year," we said, "Fine." And I had a deal. I had a deal in December. But those big companies' contracts take a long time, so the contracts didn't come till January. And so what he was yelling at us that we shouldn't be his agents because we didn't live up to our end of the deal, which was getting a signed contract by December 31st. And my buddy was saying, "We didn't say sign contract. We said a deal. We got a deal. You should be happy. What's the problem?" And he was yelling. So I literally walked up and I said, "Here, take your book and go. Go deal with Bantam yourself. You got a book deal? Okay, fine." And he knew we were just giving up a lot of money in the deal, but I did not want his energy in the office. I didn't want to deal with him. I just saw, oh, he's one of those people that really needs to do a bunch of inner work or some effective therapy before he knows how to deal with people.
And he's a business teacher.
Right, yeah. So I don't even want him in the office. We don't need that.
Well, there's so much that we can talk about. Before we run, I like that story, in fact, thank you. And before we run out of time, let's talk a bit about aging and healing. Can we do that? And then we'll get out of time. This is a very rich book. I have to commend you.
Thank you. Yeah, there's chapters that cover almost everything. Aging, I think, you know, this all Buddhism started because Buddha got depressed when he found out that aging, old age, sickness, and death were inevitable for people. And basically, that was the beginning of Buddhist practice, his depression over aging, over the inevitability of old age, sickness, and death. And they are inevitable. Mm-hmm. They are inevitable. And so finally, the first talk that he said, he said there's four great truths. One, there is aging, sickness, old age, death. There's pain in being physical. That's true. And life can be so unsatisfactory in so many ways. Or the word's been translated a zillion ways. Mm. Dukkha is the word he used, dukkha. Life is unsatisfying. Dukkha is the opposite of sukha, which means satisfying and wonderful. Mm. And life is not that. That's true. Those things are all true. Life. I saw somebody with a T-shirt with big black letters in Berkeley saying, "Life is a bitch and then you die." And I said, "That's it. That's a great translation of Buddha's first great truth."
Oh, Lord.
And as my Zen teacher said, our absurdists, our Western philosophers, were really aware of that, of Buddha's first great truth. What they didn't see, what they didn't get, was that fortunately there's some other great truths beyond that. And the next great truth is that we do not have to suffer in this. Yes, life can be painful at times because we have bodies. We're going to sometimes hurt ourselves. There will be pain. It's inevitable. Mm-hmm. We'll age. It's inevitable. But we don't have to suffer mm-hmm. about it. Our suffering is optional.
But like you said about the dentist, you know, because I was thinking about stubbing a toe. If a person gets right into that pain, we
right.
can often reduce that pain very rapidly, and that's a part of satisfaction.
Yeah.
I'm trying
yes.
to cycle it back to what you were saying there.
Yes, yeah, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. So if we deal with that, we're going to age, but tell us about what that aging is like, you know?
Yeah, we're going to age, and that becomes part of our practice. Even all our thoughts about aging, okay, are we in denial of it, or are we rejecting it or resisting it emotionally? Are we resisting what is? It is what is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have found the power of affirmations, and I affirm that I am half my age. My image of it is we have this subconscious that's incredibly powerful and will take in whatever we tell it. So I affirm now that I'm young, I'm eternally young, and I also just affirm that I'm brilliant, I'm a genius, and I'm handsome, and all these great things, because my feeling is our subconscious is like a five-year-old that will believe anything you tell it, and it's incredibly powerful. So I say, I am in perfect health. I'm in perfect health, physically, mentally, emotionally. I often affirm that many times a day, and that I really think is why I've been in perfect health. Everyone
well, that's
says,
like an active meditation, eh? You're just running these wonderful thoughts through, you're choosing the thoughts and running them through your mind, right?
Yes, yes, yes. I met a guy who was late 80s or something, came up to me after one of my talks, and he was the first one that said that. He said, oh, I do affirmations all the time. I affirm I'm in perfect health, mentally, emotionally, and physically.
I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, that's a great one to do. Just affirm you're in perfect health.
Well, Mark Allen, we have to say goodbye right now, but it's not really goodbye because I'm going to be reading more and more of this book. I'm practicing it. So I thank you. And tell people how, tell them a little bit about how to be in touch with you if they want to or where to buy the book.
Thank you, Veronica. The book should be available every place good books are sold, or you can go to...
Under the good books section.
Yes, right, under the great enlightened works of mankind. And or you can go to www.newworldlibrary.com, New World Library, or www.markallen.com. And there you can see all my books and music.
Wonderful. And your music is self-created? I mean, you're the...
Yes.
Composer?
Yep. I've played all my life, and I've recorded 7 albums now.
Wow. We'll have to listen to those. I just wanted to say something that often hits my little mind, which is if we had done www.com, C-A-L-M, I wonder how we'd all be. That's an affirmation, too.
Yes, yes. It's great to just affirm I'm calm or... Or for me, I got this from a Unity Church minister in books that I read in my 20s named Catherine Ponder. But
yes.
Just the phrase, in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way, are so powerful. I think those four words, easy, relaxed, healthy, positive, which I've said thousands of times, I say daily, I think they have an amazing impact in my life.
Well, you're very inspiring, Mark. So you've had an impact in my life and to listeners. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Veronica.
All right. Many blessings.